Okay, we are back. You are listening to Floor Radio. I'm Dave Foster. This morning we're going to look back at the events that have shaped this industry over the last couple of weeks. And with us to do this is Frank O'Neill, the co-publisher of Floor Focus Magazine. Good morning, Frank. How you doing?
Good, Dave. How about you?
Okay, I'm doing great. And we were going to give you a call last week, but it was the 4th of July, and I thought I'd give you another day to take it easy.
Okay, we probably would have been talking to the sky. I don't know if that there were many people listening to Floor Radio or any other radio for that matter on the 4th.
So. Well, I think in Dalton probably you're right. There was probably five people out there, and they just couldn't get up and shut the radio off. It was the only reason they were listening. So I think it's better to save it for this week anyway. And one of the things I wanted to ask you about was Mohawk's acquisition of some of the assets of Columbia Flooring. They bought, as everyone knows by this point, they bought four facilities from Columbia, two pre-finished plants and one engineered plant in the U.S. and the plant that we had talked earlier about in Malaysia. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, I think it's for Mohawk, it's a really interesting acquisition. It really puts them in the forefront of the hardwood business. They instantly become the number two player in the hardwood, the U.S. hardwood sector, behind Armstrong. Of course, it's far behind Armstrong, but last year we had Armstrong at $760 million estimated sales, and Columbia at $189 million. Since we reported that $189 million, Mohawk says that the plants that they bought represent approximately $180 million in annual sales. So obviously sales have gone down since last year. You know, it's kind of tough atmosphere out there right now for hardwood, but you know, if I think Mohawk's getting into the business certainly gives that company a real leg up on the race to be dominant player in that business. Of course, Armstrong throughout its bankruptcy has you know, the one part of their business that's really continue to do well is the hardwood business, even though they certainly did have some problems. Mohawk doesn't have the same kind of constraints that Armstrong had. It's got a great distribution network. I expect Mohawk to really be able to make something quite big out of this acquisition. You know, I particularly like the little Malaysian plant that I'm not sure. I say little. I think it was in the $40 million range, the sales in the Malaysian engineered hardwood plant in Malaysia that Columbia bought not too long ago, a couple of years ago. In fact, Columbia grew dramatically in the past 5 years or so through a lot of small acquisitions of solid hardwood plants in the United States, and I think they, you know, I really think they grew too fast at a time when competition from overseas was getting really intense. And
just had a lot more capacity than they could fill.
Yeah, and speaking of capacity, that's exactly right. And capacity, Mohawk probably bought more than 50% of that capacity on a commission basis over the years, and Columbia had tried to start its own brand, but that didn't seem to do too well. So, you know, I think Columbia's problems were Mohawk's opportunity, and you know, for Mohawk, I'm sure they bought it at a perfect time. You know, when a company is going through problems, you can get a pretty good price. And, you know, which isn't necessarily Mohawk's strategy. Mohawk has bought, when Mohawk bought Daltile, that company was doing great. And some people have accused Mohawk of paying too much for what they've gotten in the past. But Mohawk has always done gangbusters with their acquisitions. So,
yeah, well, that's the thing, is you don't hear too many people saying that anymore about either the Daltile acquisition or the Unilin acquisition. They said that on the front end, but I don't hear many people saying it at this end.
Well, that, you know, that's been consistently true with just about every acquisition that Mohawk has made. On the front end, people say paid too much. Within a year, they're saying what a great deal it was. So
that's
Mohawk
right, that's right.
has been the master at acquiring companies and integrating them into their operating system. Just absolutely the best.
Well, this one certainly was a marriage made in heaven. Let's take a break here, Frank.
You bet.
We'll come back and talk about this. And I've got another question I want to ask you about the whole wood sector.
Sure.
Frank O'Neill is with us this morning. He is the co-publisher of Floor Focus magazine. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. Stay with us. This is Floor Radio. This is Floor Radio. I'm Dave Foster. We have Frank O'Neill from Floor Focus magazine on the line with us. We're talking about some of the events that have occurred over the last couple of weeks in this business. We were talking about the acquisition of some of the Columbia flooring assets by Mohawk, and that, of course, was a marriage made in heaven in that, as you mentioned earlier, Columbia was a major supplier to Mohawk. You know, I think since we talked last, Frank, if I'm not mistaken, in fact, we're going to talk a little bit later in the program about some changes that have occurred within the Tarkett organization. And before we talk about that, I understand that the wood operation, the hardwood unit of Tarkett, is on the block.
Yeah, that's my understanding, too. Now, no, as far as I know, no potential buyer as of yet. Now, that's an interesting situation. Tarkett, which had been called Harris Tarkett until the name was changed 5 years or so ago, had been the number two player behind Armstrong. And even during the time when hardwood sales were going up at an 8 to 10% clip per annum, Tarkett sales were stalling. And I think Tarkett just was unable to create an exclusive brand image. Like Anderson has a great brand image. Anderson is a distinctive entity in the hardwood business, and Tarkett hardwood never was able to create that kind of image for itself. So I think, you know, at a time when we've seen a lot of intense competition in the hardwood business, of course, especially coming from China, I think that really hurt Tarkett's wood business. I don't know too much about their plants. They're mostly in your part of the world, I think, in Tennessee.
Yeah, Johnson City.
Yeah. That should make an interesting acquisition. For,
how large was that? Was that operation? How long? I guess what I'm asking is the whole hardwood application.
We had them estimated at $125 million in sales in 2006, and at one time they had been probably $150 million. So, you know, even, and this is of course at a time when hardwood sales are going up, and as you know, Dave, China is the biggest importer of hardwood into the United States right now. A lot of American companies, including Anderson, are having some of their products made in China. China is also on the, and that's, those are usually on the higher end of the market. There's some very good manufacturers in China. There are also some manufacturers in China who really target the lower end, as you might imagine,
sure,
of the market. And they're working through importers and distributors and bringing a lot of low low-priced, low-end wood into the United States.
And so then the problem at Tarkett was that they, what, didn't position themselves properly and with all the changes going on in the market?
Well, certainly they didn't have the kind of brand image, like I said, that they needed to compete with a low-end producer. So, it's certainly marketing position, and you know, I'm not sure what other problems they had in the marketplace. But you know, Tarkett's been going through a lot of changes in recent years. Of course,
let's do this. Let's take a break here. We'll come back and talk about some of those changes. I've got one more question about the Tarkett wood unit that I want to ask you, and then we'll get on to some of the changes at Tarkett. Frank O'Neill's with us this morning. He is the co-publisher of Floor Focus magazine. We're going to pause here. Stay with us. This is Floor Radio. This is Floor Radio. I'm Dave Foster. Frank O'Neill's on the line with us this morning, the co-publisher of Floor Focus magazine. We're looking back at some of the events in this week, of this week, in the floor covering industry. And we've been talking about wood and most recently about the fact that the wood operation at Tarkett has been placed on the block. The one question I wanted to ask you about that is who's going to end up with it? We were just talking about an acquisition that Mohawk made of some of the assets of Columbia. You think Mohawk is first in line?
Oh, I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine. If you said Mohawk, my first thought was why would Mohawk want to buy it when they just bought Columbia? I would think they'd want to sink their teeth into that before going off and buying somebody else. And then I might be totally wrong. I don't have a clue, Dave.
I think a lot of these are just opportunistic acquisitions, and certainly Mohawk has been good in that area. When something becomes available, they certainly have written the book on how to take advantage of it.
So
if this comes up and the price is right, again, I don't think Mohawk gets involved in a new category to be the third largest or to be the second largest with a great margin like we see in the wood arena. So who knows?
Well, that's, you know, one of the interesting things that I saw in the Mohawk press release, they're now either first or second in a whole bunch of categories, and that includes certainly ceramic tile, rugs.
Everything that they're in, I think, isn't it?
Pardon?
Everything that they're in. Is that what you said? They're either one or two.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
They're certainly carpet, ceramic, laminate, even stone, and of course area rugs. They're the biggest in the world in area rugs. They're the biggest in the world in ceramic, stone. I guess through the Daltile acquisition, they've become a huge player.
I think they made a lot of acquisitions in the stone area, smaller ones, but I guess it's such a fractionalized industry that they're probably by far the largest.
Yeah, and Daltile already had a little bit of stone when they bought it. So, stone has been very important at the high end of the market. It continues to be a huge. We don't cover it that much in our business because not too many independent retailers are carrying stone, but, that's a huge category. Stone is mostly sold through independent warehouses or people who have huge showrooms and carry tremendous amount of stone inventory. And they're usually in places, high-end marketplaces around the country.
Yeah, and that very well may be changing, though, as some of these larger players, the larger floor covering operators, very likely will move into this, you know, into this area.
Certainly, you know, I would say certainly Mohawk's retailers who are in high-end markets, I would think that a lot of them would be certainly looking very closely at stone. You know, you need to really do stone right, you have to have a lot of space. So that's going to be one deterrent to a small retailer in an inner city. If you have a retail store in the suburbs and you have enough space, one of the local stone showrooms right here in Westchester County, New York, their showroom must be 50,000 square feet, and they sell both stone and ceramic in that showroom, nothing else. So it's a big showroom, and it's dedicated. So and those usually consumers like to shop in places like that where they have a huge selection.
Let's pause here, Frank, and sure. I'm going to come back and ask you about some of the changes. We'll talk a little bit about some of the changes in the Tarkett organization, really a reorganization. We're going to pause here. Frank O'Neill's on the line with us this morning, the co-publisher of Floor Focus magazine. We're going to be right back. Stay with us. This is Floor Radio. This is Floor Radio. I'm Dave Foster. We have Frank O'Neill on the line with us this morning, the co-publisher of Floor Focus magazine. We're talking about some of the events that have happened in this business over the last 2 weeks. And as we had alluded to earlier, changes within the Tarkett organization on a global basis, and it seems like they're going to be focusing more on regional markets. They will be run by folks in that region, and in terms of the North American unit, that's going to be headed by Jeff Petita, and he is the CEO of Johnsonite. He will remain the CEO of Johnsonite. He will also be heading all of Tarkett's operations in North America. I guess what? The new owners of Tarkett, the Colbert Kravitz Roberts, decided they needed some changes.
Well, I would certainly say that they were behind that change, and I think it's a great change. You know, you mentioned the word regional. They've broken it up into regions. Well, you know, your idea and my idea of regions, I think, are different than Tarkett's because, they really have been looking at the flooring business as a worldwide operation. And you and I know that the North America, the flooring business in North America is far different than it is in Western Europe or Eastern Europe or the Far East. So I think this decision to break it up into North America, Western Europe, and Eastern Europe is a very, very smart decision. And, the folks at Johnsonite, Jeff Petita and Carmen Pastori and their team, they've made quite a reputation as a key player in the commercial market with their rubber business, and now they'll be leading both Tarkett's residential and commercial businesses. So,
well, they must have seen something in him awfully quickly for him to rise to the top as quickly as he did.
Oh, most definitely. Johnsonite's a great company, well run, incredibly good marketing. I mean, you think about it. Anybody who can make rubber flooring into a glamour product has to have some real smart marketing savvy, because that's exactly what Johnsonite is. It's a designer's favorite. The tremendous marketers. They promote rubber as a system. They really know what they're doing. Of course, you know, they're going to be running the the residential business of Tarkett's too, and that's a totally new challenge for them. It'll be interesting. You know, I think they're going to have to bring in somebody who really understands the residential.
I don't think there's any question. Let me run some of the other changes by you. As we mentioned, Jeff Petita is going to be he will head the North American unit. He'll also remain the head of Johnsonite, and I'm sure I'm going to mess this first name up. It's D-R-A-G-A-N, Dragan, Sarkovic.
I'm not going to touch it.
He is going to head operations in Eastern Europe. Regis Dubosio is going to head operations in Western Europe. And in terms of North America, Gilles de Beaumont, he will be the president of Tarkett Commercial Tile. That includes ASRock and Expressions. And Guglielmi Lavador, which I'm sure I mispronounced, and I apologize if I did that. He will be president of the Tarkett residential business.
Right.
Now, I guess my question is, what changes do you imagine may be next? Are there more?
Well, that's a really good question. I think we're going to have to wait and see what... I'm sure there are going to be changes. Tarkett... certainly in North America has always been, on their biggest business, of course, is the vinyl business. And they've got a small linoleum business. Now, apparently, they're not going to have a hardwood business in the United States. So essentially, it's vinyl and linoleum. They're in a very strong position, the second largest vinyl composition tile business in the country, and as you know, Dave, VCT or vinyl composition tile is used pretty exclusive. Well, not pretty, very exclusively in the commercial market.
Yeah.
The residential business, they've got a very big modern plant in Quebec. They've got a plant in Florence, Alabama, and of course the operation in Houston, Texas, the VCT plant in Houston, Texas.
Hey Frank, let me jump in here. We're running long.
Let's do that.
And let's conclude this conversation.
Talk to your advertisers.
We got to give them a little bit of elbow room here.
Absolutely.
Okay, Frank O'Neill is with us this morning, the co-publisher of Floor Focus magazine. We're looking back at the couple of weeks in this business. We'll be right back. Stay with us. This is Floor Radio. This is Floor Radio. I'm Dave Foster. Frank O'Neill's with us this morning, the co-publisher of Floor Focus magazine. We're looking back over the last couple of weeks in this business. We were talking about some of the changes at Tarkett. And I guess just to wrap this thing up, what do you think KKR saw in Tarkett that they saw that needed changing? That's a complicated question, but...
I think originally, Tarkett, the French owners of the company of Tarkett were looking for a minority partner, and KKR came in and was one of many companies I think negotiating with them, and. I think they saw the floor covering industry as a big opportunity, and particularly in North America, Tarkett has pretty much been consistently the third. If we look at the number four player in the business, or the third in some cases, if we look at the big four players in the business, Armstrong, Mannington, Congolium and Tarkett, they haven't they haven't done as well in most of the areas as their competitors. So, you know, I think KKR saw opportunity to increase their market position there. So, you know, I think that's been the impetus for KKR's acquisition of the company.
Yeah, and they just thought that they needed to shake things up a little bit once they arrived.
Yeah, you know, this is speculation too. I think originally KKR also had its eyes on Armstrong, and possibly, you know, at the point when it bought 50% of Tarkett, they might have had their eyes on Armstrong even then and saw this as a good jumping off point. Well, you know, as we understand, KKR is no longer in the running to buy Armstrong. You know, I think my understanding was price was too high, and there's some other factors involved in that, some complicating factors. So, you know, and that's another thing. We've been talking about the Armstrong deal. First, it was going to happen by the end of May. And then we heard it was going to happen by the end of June, and here we are. What are we in the middle
of
July now?
Yeah.
I believe we're in the middle of July right now, aren't we, Dave?
As far as I can tell. I don't have a calendar right here, but as far as I can tell, we are.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what year it is.
I'm pretty sure the June has gone by, and we still haven't heard anything about the Armstrong acquisition. So, you know, that's pretty much an aside to what you asked me, but I wouldn't be at all surprised that KKR originally had that in their minds.
Well, that would make sense, and of course, you know, that was a long way from having control of Armstrong, but still, that was probably on their mind when they first started talking with Tarkett.
I would certainly think that it was. Anyway, you know, long term, I think, you know, the new North American executive team for Tarkett has got its hands full. It'll be interesting. You know, Johnsonite, Jeff Petita, Carmen Pastore, and their crew just recently took over the European imported products of Tarkett and added it to the Johnsonite commercial label. So, you know, they've had their hands full, and that happened at the beginning of the year. They've had their hands full since then, and now they've really got their hands
full. They really have their hands full. Well, let's take a break. We're going to come back in a couple of minutes. Need to give, as you mentioned earlier, some of these sponsors a chance to get a word in edgewise. Frank O'Neill's with us this morning. He is the co-publisher of Floor Focus magazine. We're going to be right back. Stay with us. This is Floor Radio. This is Floor Radio. I'm Dave Foster. Frank O'Neill's on the line with us this morning. He is the co-publisher of Floor Focus magazine. We're talking about some of the recent changes in this business, one of which I understand, Frank, we've seen some changes at the commercial unit of Mohawk.
That's right.
Jim McCollum has left, and Al Kabus has joined.
That's right. And, you know, we've known Al Kabus for a whole bunch of years now. I think one of the first things that Al did in his career, he was a super salesman in the New York region, really turned the Bentley Prince Street New York business. I think he pretty much turned that around. Doubled sales. He was made president of Bentley, and he was president of that company, I want to say, for 2 or 3 years. Later, he became president of Blue Bolt, which was a very interesting internet business that you know, its intent was to make Blue Bolt the designer's site for specking products for the commercial market.
Right.
As it turned out, designers didn't want to get their products online. You know, they preferred to get them directly from the players in the business.
Well,
so.
He was an early adopter too. He was there early, and I think a
very
lot
early.
Of the technology.
And, you know, that's actually you know, his insights into getting into the business early, I think, was a big problem in the internet. All the early players got washed out.
Well, the technology changed so quickly also, and it was difficult to know where to cast your lot.
Technology changed. You really didn't know what people on the receiving end of the technology were going to do. You know, it's great to be a pioneer, but the pioneers often pay the price of being in too early in a lot of different things. You know, I guess there's a happy medium. You don't want to get into a business too late, but you don't want to get in too early either. So now Al's going to be running the commercial business. Jim McCallum, you may recall, came in after Tom Lape had been running that business, and Tom was promoted to head the residential Mohawk's residential business, and Jim had been president of Lee's when Mohawk bought that company, and he was brought in and replaced Tom Lape as the head of the commercial business. What? How long ago? That was 4 years ago.
So something like that.
Yeah.
Every time you ask me, as I say, every time you ask me how many years ago that was, I'm sure I don't have a batting average of, you know, six there, but whatever. It seems like it was somewhere in that range.
Yeah.
One more change I wanted to mention before we run out of time here was Bill Story's been named a senior VP and general manager at Karastan for the fashion brands, the Karastan and Ralph Lauren and some others.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, Bill's, you know, an old pro in our business. He's been around a long time. Great guy. You know, I wish him well at that job. That's he's got a bunch of great businesses to run, very high end.
Well, he does, and has his hands full.
Well, you know, I think he's gonna be up to that task. It's you know, it's a great high end business, and in a good position already. The brand names are fabulous. Karastan,
no question.
Ralph
no.
Lauren,
no question.
Custom Weave, and Helios. You know, I wish him all the best in that.
And one more thing here before we're just about out of time here, and they're liable to throw us out here at the radio station.
Well,
but
we don't want them to do that.
I did want to mention Doug Amundson had passed a little while ago. He was one of the founders of the CFI, the Certified Floor Covering Installers. He was also past president of that organization. And a very bright guy, tireless worker, was out on the road all the time doing certifications and so on, and a pioneer in this business, and he will be sorely missed.
Yes, indeed. Indeed.
And on that note, Frank, we are out of time, and we will give you a call in a couple of weeks and do it all again.
I'll be looking forward to it, Dave. Waiting by the phone.
You got it, Frank.
All right.
Hey, we've been talking with Frank O'Neill, the co-publisher of Floor Focus magazine, and this is Floor Radio. Yeah.